Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Talking Games with Kelly and Andrew. I'm Andrew.
I'm Kelly.
How are you doing today, Kelly?
I am doing so great. Thank you for asking. I showed you my mushroom light earlier.
That sounds weird. when you can show me the light, it's fine. But when you just describe it, it sounds a little strange.
Right. I have a new mushroom light on my desk, everybody. It's warm. It's a warm light. It's just a standalone battery powered. So, you know, it's soft. It's gentle.
Do you like that we wait? We've been talking for what, like 15, 20 minutes? And been silence from my feline. And the second we hit record, he's like, wait. Do you think he literally hears hello, everyone? He's like, ooh, that's me. I'm everyone.
Yeah. He just wants to be part of the conversation.
Well, he just laid down on the bed. So I think he's okay.
He's done.
He's done.
He said, I said my piece.
Kelly, exciting news for listeners. Maybe. I don't know. I guess it depends.
I guess it's neutral news.
It could be exciting if you dislike the platform you're listening on right now. Oh, wait, you think I'm talking about the first news story? I'm talking about Talking Games news.
No, I knew what you were talking about, but I thought you were talking about the other Talking Games news.
Wait, there's more than one Talking Games news? More than one Talking Games news. Well, should we start with the news that is semi-neutral, or should we start with the news that's good but won't affect that many people?
Let's do the semi-neutral news first.
Okay, which one do you want to take?
I'll take the one that I'm responsible for.
It sounds a lot worse than it is.
Or better. It sounds better than it is, too.
It would be better if you're like, we're paying our audience.
Yeah, that would be really
every something. Audience member will receive $3 for every episode you've listened to ever.
Wow.
So for some of you, that'll be what? $345.
Sure,
no, wait.
Yeah.
$415.
You know I don't know how to do math, so.
I'm also, while you speak, I'm going to verify. Well, I just, hang on. Don't start.
Oh, times, okay, sorry.
How many dollars I said? Three.
Three.
It's 405. I said 415. I was wrong. Okay, go ahead.
You were just being very generous, very charitable.
Someone out there is about to get $405, though.
And it's Ben the cat.
He doesn't listen to the show. He hates it. He said, I like Kelly, but I can't stand that other guy.
So true. No, he would never say that because he can't speak.
Okay, that's why.
He's a cat. So for the moment, for the foreseeable future, we are switching to a every other week episode release. So sort of like we did this past week where we did not have an episode for the week of July 4th. We're going to be sort of doing that for, like I said, the foreseeable future until things pick up a little bit more. Nothing crazy going on, just switching things up a little bit, a little refresh, you know, it's nice to come back after an empty week and have more news to talk about, since the summer months are sometimes a little bit slower after like Summer Games Fest and stuff like that. Obviously, if anything really big happens, we would be recording an episode that week. But just for the moment, the new norm going forward is going to be every other week. And then we will switch back to weekly in the future. But
yeah, I feel like if you look at like the upcoming calendar, there's like a bomb ticking and it's going to explode. But at this rate, it feels like it's going to be a while, because like the 2025 calendar is crazy. Plus 2024 right now has like Dragon Age right at the end of it. So I feel like the back half of this year, or I shouldn't say the back half, the back like third probably, or maybe quarter, I'm anticipating a lot more. We're going to have a lot of Dragon Age lead up. We're going to have, you know, games coming out. We have a bunch coming from Nintendo. And then we have Dragon Age itself, which, you know, Kelly's going to have something to say for like, I don't know, how many weeks are you going to be playing that game that you're going to have new thoughts every single week? Probably like 12,000.
I don't know. I am thinking, depending on when it comes out, I might try and like no life it and just power through as fast as I can so I don't get spoiled.
So you mean give up your social life?
Yeah, and like take time off of work.
Okay. Go all in.
Go all in, because I really don't want to be spoiled and I don't want my opinion to be marked too much by outside external sources.
Right. That should be interesting. I feel like it will be an exciting time. Right. And then obviously Nintendo is like, it's like we're playing a game of hot potato with Nintendo right now, and they have just been holding the hot potato for like 7 months. And we're like, Nintendo, you have to give us the hot potato. And it feels like a quarter second before the music turns off, they're just going to throw the hot potato at 228 miles per hour directly at our face.
Yes.
Once Switch 2 is announced, I think there will be, depending how long it is between like the announcement and the presumed like game barrage, I think we're going to have so much to talk about. But that could very well fall like at Christmas time, you know?
Right. Yeah.
They could follow the exact same path that they did in 2016-17, where they announce it right at the end of the year, because they announced the Switch 1 in, what, October, I believe, late October. And then in January, they were like, here's everything. And then it was in our hands in March. I think there's a pretty good chance that could happen again. But we have a lot on the way. GTA 5 is supposed to be next year. Death Stranding 2 is next year. Other things are next year. Monster Hunter next year. So we anticipate pickup, but right now, like this episode I'm looking at right now, it looks like a normal episode, but it's 2 weeks, you know? Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, like, I know for me, I used to, my game playing speed has reduced a little.
Yes.
And I'm sorry about that. I am ashamed deeply. And I cannot ask for the audience's forgiveness deeply enough. But it means,
how could you?
It means if we're...
How dare you? Do you have other things going on in your life? How dare you?
You're right. I should no life everything for the rest of my... Like, I should take your no life perspective, but instead of for one game, just all of them. Everything.
Exactly.
But it does mean that I get to play games more thoroughly before we get into them, which is kind of nice, especially for what we'll be talking about at the end of this episode. But that's the first bit of talking games news. And the second bit of talking games news that is not negative in any capacity, no matter how you look at it, is that we are on a new platform. If you do not like Spotify, if you do not like Apple Podcasts, or if you do not like whatever you're listening on, which I presume is one of those two statistically, we're now on YouTube Music. YouTube Music had the option to basically add our feed a while ago because Google Podcasts is going kaput. They're going away. But it's kind of a weird process. I was telling Kelly before that in order to get on there, you have to go through a verification process, which is weird because like I just used my Andrew is playing YouTube channel that rest in peace, you know. it was a fun experiment, but I gave up on that. But I used that channel because it already existed. I was like, okay, it has viewership. It had a few subscribers. Like, that's somewhere to start. But they were like, no, this isn't verified. And I'm like, what do you mean? That's me. That's me talking in the videos, and that's me talking in the podcast. And they were like, we need you to take a video of your face and send it to us. And I was like, you need me to what? I had to take a video, and like I was sitting there like spinning it around my face to like prove I wasn't just a still photograph, I guess. It was intense. And then after like a day, they were like, okay, fine, that's you. And I was like, okay, I can put the podcast on there. And they're like, well, yeah, I guess. It's going to be a while. And I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, it's going to take a while. And then the funniest part was about halfway through the upload, because obviously the upload's going to take a while. There's a lot of content. But halfway through, it just said, we will resume tomorrow. I was like, what? Why do you have to stop? And they're like, we're done for the day. We're done. They were like, it's 6 p.m. We're clocked out. You said that joke. Sorry, I stole your clocked out joke.
It's okay. That's all right.
But little shout out to new friend of the show, Dowds. New friend that I made. And I was like, oh, well, where do you listen to podcasts? And then he said YouTube Music. And I was like, oh, I guess people do use that platform that I pretended that people don't use. And I know that some people prefer that. So if that's you and you want to give up on listening to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, you have a new means of doing so. It is fun. It uploads, it automatically puts like the little thumbnail in there. So every episode has its unique thumbnail, which doesn't, that's not really that crazy. I'm amazed by simple technology, aren't I?
But it is worth a yippee.
It's worth one yippee. Just one.
And I did it. And so if you're asking for more, you are not going to get that.
No. But if you do want more of us, we have news to talk about.
Yippee! Oops.
No, you can yippee this. This is news. This first bit of news is yippee. I mean, yippee! I'm not going to do it because you're the yippeer. Oh.
Yippee!
I shouldn't say it like that. But Kelly is the yippeer of the show. Our pals over in Japan at Sega at Ryuga Gotoku. I'm so bad. It's so hard for me to say that name. Ryuga Gotoku. RGG. Mm-hmm. The studio behind Like a Dragon series, as well as Judgment. Their new game is in the works, which, you know, not surprising. They make those games like it takes 20 seconds. I have no idea how they pump these things out so quickly. But what they did say is that for the next title in the series, we will be surprised. I know that doesn't sound like a lot of news, but it's almost like it's their MO to kind of surprise us, because they went from real-time combat to turn-based. That's a huge change. So in a sense, them saying, you'll be real surprised by the next one, I'm like, well, what are you doing now? So I'm very hopeful that maybe this is like a very interesting spinoff or something that takes an entirely new approach. Hopefully it's not like a racing game.
That would be kind of interesting, though.
Just like Forza, but it's Kiryu driving.
Yeah, and it'd have like the high graphical fidelity of Forza. But all of the models would still be from Like a Dragon, mm-hmm. So it would kind of clash a lot.
You just see like the afro of Kaguya just sticking out of the freaking top of the car.
I would like that. You guys were a well of ideas over here at Talking Games. So if you're ever looking for any inspiration, you know where to find us. You can find us on YouTube Music now. So
yeah, exclusively. I'm deleting our Spotify.
Oh, wow. That would really be quite the move.
Why? Because that's where like 74% of our listenership comes from.
Yeah, I think many of our listeners would be confused and scared.
Well, especially because it'd be just gone. They haven't heard this episode, so they don't know why it's gone. They just know it's gone.
Right, exactly. They'd be really out of the know. We would have to remake all of our podcasts. Just like Ubisoft is working on remakes of Assassin's Creed, according to Yves Guillemot.
Yves,
yeah.
Isn't it Yves?
Isn't it when it's spelled like that, it's like Yves, like Yves Saint Laurent?
I thought it was Yves. It's Yves. I thought it was Yves Guillemot. I don't know.
It might be.
I hate the guy, so I don't care how to pronounce his first name.
Well, he's the CEO of Ubisoft, for those who don't know. And this was just revealed in a random interview on Ubisoft's website. And he was just like, yeah, we're just going to remake some of our old games. And we're going to make them easier to play, modernize them. Whatever that means. I think the only games that could really use this touch are probably the first three.
Well, that's ironic, because the rumors of this are that the first remake is going to be for Black Flag.
Which I understand, because I think there is a higher demand for Black Flag, because there's not really, if we're being totally true and real and honest, there's not a lot of great pirate games out there, but the first game is so old. Right. How could I forget Skull and Bones?
They just made Skull and Bones. I don't know if I trust them to remake Assassin's Creed 4.
Yeah. I just feel like the first... Well, I guess the second one is a little more complicated because there's 2 and Brotherhood and Revelations. But 1 could sincerely use that. And 2 could really use that. And honestly, 3 too. I think 3 is a little bit better. But it's still like, you know, it's still from the Xbox 360 generation. So...
I guess
this is what they'll use that Ubisoft forward platform or whatever it's called for.
The Assassin's Creed platform that like was supposed to, it's supposed to come along with the last one. What was the one?
The Mirage.
Yeah, but it didn't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't trust them. I also think it's absurd that they're remaking multiple Assassin's Creed games. I don't think it's a franchise that needs that.
I don't understand. I think for nostalgia factor, a lot of people do like the first two games, especially the second first game.
Okay. I was going to say, I don't know a soul who likes the first Assassin's Creed.
I think people would like it more if they remade it.
Yeah.
Because it's just so old at this point and clunky, but starting with four is kind of an interesting choice. And then it also makes you think, like, okay, are they going to do five? Five was what? Syndicate? With the twins?
I thought that was Unity. I have no idea. I should not be contributing to that part of the conversation, but...
Well, I guess that's just my thinking, is like, why would they start with four? But I guess maybe because there aren't really many very good pirate games out there, including Ubisoft's own bad pirate game.
Assassin's Creed 4 has over 34 million sales. That's nuts. That's crazy.
Because people didn't care that it was an Assassin's Creed game. People wanted to play pirate game.
I just think it's silly to remake this stuff. I think they have the ability to make this just accessible in an easy way. Like, launch that weird Assassin's Creed platform, or just port it. Just port them. Why do you have to make a weird platform? Just port these to modern platforms.
I think a lot of them are ported.
I don't think you can play 2, can you?
Let me look it up on
Assassin's
Steam.
Assassin's Creed 2. Well, that's... Steam would have it. I don't think PS4 does, though.
Yeah, probably not.
And I don't see any reason that they couldn't put Assassin's Creed 2 on PS4.
All right.
Oh, it is on PS4. They did the Ezio collection. I'm a dingus.
What we've got on Steam... Oh my god, dude, there's so many Assassin's Creed games.
That's why I'm sitting here and I'm like, it's pointless. It's too dense.
Assassin's Creed, Director's Cut, that's the first game. Liberation, which is the PSP Vita game that was around the same time as the third game. They did remaster 3 already.
And 4.
Freedom Cry, I don't know. 4, Rogue, Brotherhood, Revelations 2 is on PC. Syndicate, Unity, Origins, Odyssey, and Valhalla.
The order that you read those in made my brain just start seeping out of my eye sockets, because that was such a, like, that was not at all like the order they released in. And I was like, what are we hearing right now?
Yeah, that is a bit confusing.
But I don't know. I think it's a pointless franchise to be remaking things for. It's like just, Assassin's Creed is such a boring series to me. Like, it's just something it's just one of those series which is like, yep, it's what we expect. Even the new one, what's it called? Shadows? Yeah. Looks different enough. But the second I saw gameplay footage, I was like, oh, it's Assassin's Creed. I'm like, I like the setting, but like, okay.
Yeah, I like the early games, but
I don't think I need a remake, really... though.
Yeah, I don't know necessarily that they need to be remade. I agree.
Hey, it's just silly. Also, when Yves Gamot says anything, or however you say his name, I get annoyed because I'm like, shut up. Don't talk.
Let me look it up.
How to say Yves? Yves? What'd you call him? Yves?
Yves.
Yves and Butthead?
Yves and Butthead. Yes. Eve is pronounced as Eve with a long E sound, similar to the English word Eve. The Y is not pronounced as a consonant, but rather as a vowel sound, like the letter E in the English word B.
So we're both wrong?
So it's pronounced Eve or Eves. No, I was right.
Oh, but you said Eve or Eves. Which one is it?
Eves.
Oh. That guy's dumb.
Wait, let me listen.
Okay. What'd they say?
Eve.
What?
Eve.
So they didn't include the S either.
Au revoir.
Okay, well, that's not his name. We were talking about earlier about a hot potato.
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo gave us a little bit of Switch 2 news. Just a tiny bit during an investor briefing. They discussed the fact that the new Switch, which again is still not named, not Switch 2 or anything, will not be affected by part shortages. It seems like a strange thing to say outright, but if you remember at all what 2020 and 2021 were like, and I guess it was the end of 2022, right? It was a few years. Part shortages were really, really negatively affecting not just like computers, but video game consoles in particular. Even the Switch, which is a baby little weak console, was affected by chip shortages. So I didn't even fully realize that that situation was entirely resolved, but Nintendo basically came forward and was like, this is not an issue anymore, which makes me excited because I hope that means they can actually stock up when the Switch 2 comes out, so it's an easy console to attain. What this tells me is that they have the option to make it easily attainable. Now the question is, will they do so?
Will they pop out? Will they pop in? I was actually going to say something that would make this episode go from PG to rated R.
Say it now.
No, I won't. But it does involve popping. And that's all you really need to know. And those who get it, get it.
Are you talking about butts?
Nope.
You're talking about another thing that's a little bit related to a butt?
Sure. Okay. do you want to hear some really interesting news from Sega? Yeah. Because they have an update on their Crazy Taxi remake. Or title, I guess it is.
It was advertised as a remake when we heard about it, but...
Yeah, it's not a remake anymore. It's certainly just a Crazy Taxi game, because it's going to be an open world multiplayer game.
Yay! Playing
Crazy Taxi Battle Royale, Crazy Taxi MMO RPG. So we were all so excited when we saw that cool Sega trailer like last summer, mm-hmm. last winter.
I was at the Game Awards.
That was like, look at all these games we're remaking. It is not so.
No.
I can't believe.
What? Why? Why? Add a mode. Add a battle royale mode to your game, but like, keep the core.
I mean. Yeah. I don't want to, like, speak too soon because I feel like this could be kind of an interesting thing going on. But I never am, like, excited when a game becomes multiplayer. I never feel like that is, especially since it was sort of advertised differently when we first learned about it.
Mm-hmm.
That does not bode, in my opinion. But
it's a frustrating.
I don't know.
It's a frustrating way to bring back a dormant series.
Yeah.
Like people want their series to come back in a way that reminds them of what they loved. And this, I don't know how that happens. I don't know how you recover. Like that clashes with what Crazy Taxi is if they're trying to recapture that original vision. And obviously they're not. They're trying to do something new. But it was because it was present. You hit the nail on the head because it was presented to us in like this trailer that was like, look at all these remakes. And now they're completely making a U-turn, if you will. It's frustrating. Save it for the game. Let me U-turn in the game. Don't U-turn in real life.
Yeah.
Not great.
Not great.
But if you want to play a remake of a game that is very faithful from the looks of it, Dead Rising Deluxe Remaster. That's DRDR. If you want to be a silly little bugger. Was announced and is coming out September 19th of this year. It is not just a remaster. It is a pretty substantial overhaul of the visuals, now made in the RE engine that Capcom uses for most of its games. New character models, new lighting, new everything. Everything looks really nice. Have you played Dead Rising?
No, but you know what's funny? I always get it confused with Dead or Alive.
No, yeah, this is very different.
Very different games.
There's no beach volleyball involved in this one.
Which is sad because I think they could really do something with these zombies.
They do a lot of things with the zombies. This game's quirky, to say the least.
Right.
I have played this game. I played it a couple years ago because I got it from, well, I guess a few years ago because it was before this show. It came with a Humble Bundle I got. And the first game that this is a remaster/remake of is really, really not fun to play now. It is clunky. There are save points required, and so if you like lose or die, you just go back to the save point and can lose a whole lot of progress, which is exactly what caused me to quit, because I lost like 20 minutes of progress and I was like, that's not, I'm not doing that again. I am quite simply not doing what I was just required to do again. This game has autosave. It has the ability to save at any point. That is a huge plus for it, I think. They talked a good bit about it, but this is one of those things, until people have their hands on it, I'm not going to get too excited, because even if it's absolutely, like, visually, it is a stark difference. I feel like the most stark difference for me was the poodle. Did you see the poodle in the tradle?
Yeah.
Went from, like, the ugliest two polygons I've ever done seen to just a poodle, which I think is indicative of how much visual upgrade is involved here. But I think I was mostly surprised by the date, because why was this not at any shows, right? I know it's not the most exciting announcement in the world, but this seems like an easy, just plop this in the Xbox or plop this in Summer Game Fest, right? I would think, especially because it's out soon, so that's an exciting thing.
Yeah. Do you think they'll remake 2?
If I had to guess, they're going to see how this goes.
That's the one with like the little girl, right?
I haven't played 2. I hated 1 too much.
Okay.
I know that the later one, well, 2 people like and 3 people are iffy on, and 4 is bad. Right? 4 is the one that's Xbox exclusive for some reason.
I don't know. I couldn't tell ya. I thought, you know me, I thought the game was a totally different game. So I couldn't tell ya.
I don't think anybody's going to be remaking Dead or Alive anytime soon.
Yes. Right. Except for me. Alone.
That's creepy.
I'm so committed. I'm partnering with director Koshi Nakanishi. I'm just kidding. But he is important in our next news story, because he is going to be the next director for the next Resident Evil game, which was sort of, it was announced that he was going to be the director at the Capcom next event. Yeah.
He directed 7 for people who are.
That's right.
Which is,
that's right.
I would say, pretty important to keep in mind.
Seven.
The tweet that they announced this in, and I know it was during the next event, but the tweet that they announced this in just has a still photograph of him looking incredibly neutral and just plain text under him that says, "We're making a new Resident Evil." And that's it. That's the entirety of it.
I'm like, you know, very straightforward.
I am shocked that this is how they're... I mean, we knew that they're making one. Of course they're making one.
Right.
But this is weird, right?
It's a little weird. So I'm thinking, like, on the timeline. So the last game that came out was all about... Wait.
Well, it depends if you're talking mainline. Well, so Village came out in 2021.
And Village was 8.
Well... It might not be, but seven was the revamp.
Yes. Like, we were taking a new direction in the series,
correct?
And 8 was Village at the time when it came out,
right? People, I mean, it has, the 8 is highlighted in the title, but on every piece of like marketing material, Capcom avoids using the number 8. So I think that they're going to release Resident Evil 8 next, to be cheeky.
Yes, right. So we've seen a lot of Christopher.
Chris Redfield. You said Christopher, and I'm like, I don't know who that is.
We have seen hide nor hair of Jill or Claire or Leon.
Right.
Do you think that these characters might be returning for the next Resident Evil title, or do you think it's still going to be like Chris and what's her name? The kid.
Sarah. Or Rose.
Sarah.
Rose. I don't know why I said Sarah. It's Rose Sarah. Winters.
Who's Sarah?
Sarah, Resident Evil.
Is that a spoiler?
I don't think so. Sarah is not a character in Resident. I mean, she is, but she's like a nothing character.
So I'm also thinking we
need to representative of the Raccoon City's mayor office.
We need to bring back some like deep cuts. I want to see Jake. I want to see Sherry. I want to see Sheva. I want to see Carlos. I want to see everybody.
I want to see
the whole gang.
I really, really don't think that will happen. I think they're probably going to make...
What if it was like Resident Evil Battle Royale?
Remember 3 minutes ago when we talked about a franchise going a direction it maybe shouldn't? Also, the thing you're describing is where Resident Evil went during like the PS3 and 360 era. Like, do you remember Operation Raccoon City? Like, they did what you said, and everybody hated it deeply, and it caused Capcom to lose a lot of money. Like, a lot of money.
I think 6 also didn't perform super well for them.
Right, but it came out like they were coming out. Actually, 6 did incredibly well, which is terrifying. But the spinoffs hurt them a lot. 6 is incredibly well-selling. Let's look it up real quick.
That's crazy because I feel like people only have bad things to say about it. Now, me personally, I think 6 has bad parts. I don't think it's the worst game of all time. It's not a great Resident Evil game.
Do you want to guess the top 5 real quick?
Like how well they've sold?
Yeah.
I would say 2 Remake is probably up there pretty high.
Yeah, that's number 1. I was shocked. I would not have put that at number 1.
So 2 Remake is number
14 1. 14 million.
Is 4 Remake number 2?
No. 4 Remake is not on the list yet.
Wow. Okay, so
number 7. But it has time. It has legs. Like Resident Evil games.
Is Village number 2? Village was quite popular.
No. 3.
What's number 2?
7. 7's right behind 2. So
I will tell you, I get 7 and Village confused because I think about the VII in Village and I'm like, oh yeah, 7.
But it's like, well, it's not VII, it's VIII.
It's VIII, but the I is also the L.
Yes, and also it might not be an 8. Yeah, no, it's Resident Evil 2 had 14 million. Resident Evil 7 had 13.3 million. Resident Evil Village had 10. 5 had 9. 6 had 9. 5 and 6 are tied. For
5 is more popular than has sold more than 6?
No, they're tied. They both have 9.1.
Oh, you literally just said that.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you something. My brain don't work so good.
And then behind
that I am is not RE3 surprised.
Remake. That surprises me too.
I am not surprised that 2 is as popular as it is because it was the first RE remake and it was also really well done. And it does not surprise me that 3 is lower because it was not as good.
This list is also
but it
not
does
entirely,
surprise me that
this is not super reliable because it's splitting releases.
It does surprise me that 4 is really low because, well, not really low, but lower because I feel like even though it hasn't been out as long, I feel like people were really hyped for the 4 remake. But I guess hype doesn't always translate.
Yeah, and this is also confusing because it's like splitting them into separate categories, it looks like. No, but this is accurate. Yeah, it's Resident Evil 2 and then Resident Evil 7 and then 5. Oh. And then 6 and then Village. Oh, because Village, that has changed. Okay. Anyway, what I'm saying is I think that you're wrong and they really should not do a Battle Royale game. That sounds a little nutty. I think the next one should probably just be like another kind of 7 where it's like a kind of. I mean, the whole point of Resident Evil is it's like it's in a home. I think kind of bringing it a little bit smaller scale like 7 did could be really good. I'm not opposed to them bringing characters back, and I have a feeling they'll probably go back to third person because that Village DLC going third person makes me think, OK, that's where they want to go back to. I'm fine either way. I don't really have an opinion. I think third person is better, or I prefer it, I should say, but I like first person ones, especially if it's a little bit more like 7 than 8. But I will say, if it was like 8, like the opening area of 8, like the castle, I adored a lot.
Yeah.
So I'd be fine if it was more like that.
I like the creepy, what was the like dollhouse? Not the dollhouse.
It was the
doll.
You
know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the doll section.
In 8?
Yeah.
That was really spooky, and I think that was executed really well because it was first person. But I agree. I think it would be nice to go back to third person, and they've done it with the remakes now, so they may as well just stick to their guns. But who knows?
I mean, that's the fun thing is like I think Resident Evil is kind of like almost like a guaranteed quality series right now. Like they really know what they're doing with it.
Yeah.
So I don't really care where it goes. I just am curious. I'm going to be happy either way, I think. So, but hopefully we'll find out in the near future. I was surprised that they announced it this way. Maybe we'll find out in September. Probably not, but the Tokyo Game Show is happening, as it does every year, and PlayStation is returning.
Yippee!
They haven't been there since 2019. Wow. They've been there, like, they have, like, small booths, but this is the first time that they'll ever, that they will have a full presence. It's their largest ever attendance, they said. I'm very excited by this. I shouldn't be. PlayStation sucks right now. PlayStation has no games in the works.
I kind of feel like all of it's just that live service crap, and it's like,
but Tokyo,
all the big stuff we've kind of already seen.
Right, and the biggest thing that they have is going to be out by then. That's Astrobot. And Tokyo Game Show is not really a place for live service. I mean, they could try to change that. They're PlayStation. They're stupid. But Tokyo Game Show is really... Japan loves, like, their RPGs. They love their single-player products. Obviously, they have, you know... There are certain games with that Japanese aesthetic, like Genshin and stuff, that do thrive. But my biggest hope, based upon nothing, is that they do have some interesting things from their Japanese studios, that this is where they'll be revealing it. I don't think it's likely. I would actually go as far as to say it's quite unlikely. But I'm going to dream anyway.
You dare to dream.
I dare. Well, Tokyo Game Show is, like, kind of great, usually. We get, like, a lot of interesting tidbits on a bunch of Capcom, a bunch of Square Enix, stuff like that. So this, it's always a show that I'm excited to see. So it's not like PlayStation being there actually, like, they could absolutely blow it and it wouldn't matter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, them doing a terrible job at Summer Game Fest did suck a little bit, because it's like, ugh, what a boring way to start the show. But, like, Tokyo Game Show, I'm like, that's set. I don't care. And Tokyo Game Show's not, like, watch all these shows. It's just, like, basically a trailer barrage over the course of a few days, which is kind of fun. You know, you just never know what's going to come out. You never know what you're going to hear about.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm just
trying to coordinate dinner right now.
No, I just, part of me was like, I want to mute my mic and just have, like, a full minute where everybody's like, oh no, something's wrong with my stream cut out.
I couldn't deal with that silence.
I think it's just a really funny idea that we, like, are doing the show and then all of a sudden everything just, you know, we're just going real smooth. And then everybody checks to see if their stream stopped. I didn't do that good of a job. Oh, wait, I can make it a lot better. So yeah, the stream's going along real smooth. Was that better?
Yeah, I think it was fine the first time. There's enough gain on your mic that, you know.
Yeah. Well, I just meant, like, cutting it off literally mid-word so that people think that their stream froze.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really work when I already told them that's what I was doing. Oops.
Well, you gave away the goat, so.
There's a lot
and you
of...
gave away the goat horse.
Oh.
Named Torrent. Anybody play Elden Ring here?
I do.
Because guess what? Shadow of the Erdtree Tree did really well in sales, past 5 million in 3 days, which is significant. And Miyazaki was talking about it, and he had a fun little anecdote about how, you know, he uses the summons, and he's really not that good at the game. And that made me really happy, because I'm really not that good at the game, as Andrew knows. And I think maybe I spoke about it on the podcast, but I had to restart because my brain was so, like, I don't know what I'm doing. I tried respecking my character, and still it did not work. So I had to restart, and I have a new character now, and I'm getting a better feel for the game itself, because I haven't played it in 2 years. So my character is actually kind of the same build that it was, but that's okay.
But you're relearning.
I'm just, consistency is key for me.
That's
Shadow of the Erdtree.
That's crazy to me, because DLC never sells, like, it always does okay for big games like this, but, like, the original game has sold now 25 million copies, which, like, whoa, but that's a 20% attach rate for DLC. That's crazy.
Yeah.
DLC never sells that well.
I'm sort of a mind that, like, how many of these sales are people that have actually even started the DLC? Probably, because I know I've bought it and I have not started the DLC yet. So,
I mean, to be honest, I don't think they care.
They don't.
If you pay for it. Well, that's the thing, you pay for it. But it's expensive.
It is.
This is an expensive DLC.
It's $40 US. But I will say I would be interested in seeing, like, the actual, because if you even in the main game, if you, like, look through, like, oh, here's the achievement for all the people, or
there's
the trophy,
no achievements,
whatever.
They added no achievements for the DLC, so we cannot see.
Oh,
they specific. I don't know if that's why they didn't do it, but they didn't add any trophies or achievements or anything.
That's so interesting.
So you just have to,
because you can see in, like, the base game, you can see, like, oh, this is how many people defeated Morgott. And then, you know, it significantly drops off by the time you get to, like, even Godric. It's like people defeated Morgott and they were like, I can't do this anymore, which is kind of funny because.
Isn't Morgott a different boss? But Margit is the first boss, right? Is the bridge boss?
Yes, but they're the same character.
Yeah, but which one do you fight on the bridge?
I
thought you fought Margit.
I think
first.
You're right. I think it is Margit when you first fight him, but then when you fight him later, it's Morgott.
It's hard to spoil Elden Ring because I have played all of it and I have no idea what anything means. I've watched like hours.
He's the same guy.
Right, but he's.
He was pretending to be somebody else for the bridge fight.
Okay. Anyway.
Which is why the name is different.
But the trophy says Margit.
Right. The felt. Yes. Exactly. Yes. Uh huh.
But 20% is a crazy attach rate. And also, that was the first 3 days, and it's now been a couple weeks, and they haven't said anything. It's probably a lot higher than that. Because after 3 days, a lot of people have been talking about it. Like, a lot of people have been talking about it. Like, when's the last time you saw this many people talk about a DLC? Ever?
I don't see people
talk about DLC this way.
Yeah. Here's something funny that just happened. Have you ever had the EA app on your desktop computer or laptop?
No.
Well,
isn't it called Origin?
No, they changed it. It's the EA app now.
Okay.
Its functionality is really bad. I've just been sitting here chatting with you for the podcast, and it just popped up. No, I haven't clicked on anything. I haven't encouraged anything. It just popped up. Great functionality, great app. Thank you so much, EA, for all the work that you put into your user interface and your user experiences. Really great stuff here.
EA
great stuff
wanted,
all around.
They wanted to be talked about, so they were like, well, we know what to do. Let's
open the
app. They
were like, oh, you're talking about a different game and a different DLC? Why don't you talk about us instead?
Should be called Shadow of the Origin, because Origin died.
Yeah. Even Origin was better than this app, and I didn't like Origin at all. So, back to Elden Ring, though. I will say I am playing it still. It's hard for me because it is cutting into my Dragon Age summer, which... I am on Dragon Age 2 now, if anybody cares. But I was playing Elden Ring yesterday, and so I'm just making my way through Stormveil. It's really been fun to experience. Because so many games, like, as you guys know, whenever I replay a game, it's, like, very frequent. So, like, I played Mass Effect, like, last year and the year before. I played them, like, almost all the way through. So the replayability is, like, it's there, but I am playing the same games over and over and over again. So things become really, really familiar to me. The thing that's been nice about this replaying is that I'm not as familiar with the game. So, like, when I replay something, first of all, I'm discovering new things. And second of all, it just feels very new and very different, even though I had done it. But I haven't done it for 2 years. The last time I played through was 2022. So... there you have it. And I know somebody else on this show has also been playing Elden Ring and perhaps Shadow of the Erdtree if they want to talk about it, but
they don't have to. Why wouldn't I?
Because I'm silencing you.
You just offered me the mic.
Well, I'm about to mute you.
We should reformat the show. So you come to my house and then we physically pass the microphone back and forth. So it's just a constant struggle for whoever's allowed to speak.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. Anyway, you're right, Kelly. Although you're a little bit wrong. I have not touched the base game at all. I think the last episode was when I was like, oh yeah, I had to go back and fight Radahn because I wasn't actually ready for the DLC. And then at that point, I just entered the DLC. I hadn't done anything, hadn't gone to a boss or anything. I just walked around a bit. But I am actually done with it. I have finished the DLC. Ran me about 24 hours. That includes start to finish. all of the main story, and also I did like all of the remembrance bosses. It's like, you know, like essentially the main bosses, because you don't have to fight all of them to finish the DLC. I'm just gonna start spewing thoughts. It's Elden Ring, so like, if you like that game, it's just more. The exploration feels awesome. It's so nice to be back in a world like this, to see fresh new things. The nice thing about this versus the base game, because it ultimately, I feel like my review is going to be comparing the two, because that's just what feels natural right now. The base game, I was not able to finish without some guidance. So I was not able to get to the final boss without a little bit of guidance. This game, however, this DLC, which is essentially just a small game. I mean, is it still a big game? I told you it took 24 hours, so that's kind of long. But compared to the original game, which took me like 65 or something, it felt very good that I got to the final boss without the need for any guidance. I just kind of went with the flow, and I got there. It only took me 10 hours to get to the final boss. That initially, I was disappointed by that. I was like, that's really quick. That shouldn't have gone that quick. But then I decided, okay, I'm gonna step away. I'm gonna explore the areas that I haven't explored before. That probably added another like 4 hours or so. And then once I felt like I was ready, I went back to the final boss. And I did not have that hard of a time with this DLC. I know a lot of people had an incredibly hard time. I'm a little baby, and I play with the Mimic tier, which is a summon that replicates your character. And I really like it, and it is reliable, and it makes the game more fun for me, because it does like a good bit of damage, but the big thing is it just like distracts bosses for a second, so it gives you breathing room. And I think that's the most useful part about it. And it helps. It has a lot of health, so, you know, you can actually they don't die after a few hits. They're going to be there for most of the fight, if not all of the fight, depending who you're fighting. But none of the bosses gave me a lot of trouble. Some of the ones that people are talking about online being like insane, I finished first go. There's a boss called Relana that is pretty, everybody online is like, whoa, like this is the first real like skill test wall. What is it called? Skill check. I walked in and I said, ooh, scary. And then I beat her on first try. And I'll give myself a little bit of credit. And I filmed it on my PlayStation, so maybe I'll send this to you, Kelly. My dodges were, they kind of slapped. I had some good dodges in that fight. Like she has a move where she throws two moons at you, like literally the moon. She throws two of them at you and they like explode the entire arena. And I just dodged them. I was like, yep, perfect timing. First go. And I was like, afterwards, I was like, I just was kind of like feeling it. And it helped that the mimic was like distracting. But I felt very good about myself after that fight, because I was like, I've heard that that's hard, and I did it without problem. So anyway, I what I'm saying, what I'm getting at is that I grew arrogant. My ego was large. And I was like, this DLC isn't that bad. It would be if I didn't have mimic, because some of those bosses are nuts. But I got to the final boss. And there were probably like, right before that, there was a boss that I was hung up a little bit on, but then I realized I was doing it wrong, because you're like supposed to summon somebody. And I was like, oh, I don't like summoning human beings. And then I was like, oh wait, this is like an in-game summon. Kind of like that Radahn fight from, mm-hmm. from the original game. And then it became really easy. And I was like, oh, I was just doing it wrong. I was like, I couldn't handle that boss by myself, but the required summon was fine. And then there was a really cool boss. Well, the boss fight that is on like the DLC key art, Mesmer, was a really cool boss fight, and I enjoyed it a lot. That took me a good few attempts, but I was probably done with it in like 15-20 minutes. The final boss was, how do I put it? My progress was halted pretty intensely when I got to that boss. I will not say anything specific. This is all spoiler free. I wouldn't really know how to spoil it, because I don't know what happened in the story. Like at all. Like I literally have no idea what happened in this DLC story-wise. Like not even the faintest. Visually, like there were cool like thematic things happening, and there were a few cutscenes where I was like, ooh, but I'm like, I don't know what is happening at all. And I'll watch a lore breakdown soon. Is there a lore breakdown by what's this Vatu Vidya yet?
Of course. Already? There is.
Wow.
Yes.
Fast moving.
It's like lore revealed. He has a lore revealed video, and then he has a whole video of secrets that you might have missed in the DLC.
Me? Might have? No.
Mm-hmm. I said, not my friend Andrew. He knows everything lore related when it comes to Mesmer.
Who I know.
Did you treat yourself to 18 inches of Mesmer?
Okay. Now we're going to have to turn on the explicit tag.
I love him. His design is so incredible.
He's a really cool character. And when I got to him, I like freaked out because I walked into the boss room and I realized where I was and I was like, awesome.
You know what other boss fight I thought was really, really, I loved the design and the music.
Hmm.
I haven't played it, as you all know, but I have seen a lot of it. The dancing the dancing lion.
Yeah, that's the first beast. Boss. Well,
the music in that is so good.
Can I be honest?
Like,
with
and
you?
That's just a random like DLC boss. It's like,
I mean, it's a main story one. You do have to,
right? But it's like it's not.
There's no lore.
Ultra significant to the plot.
Well, it might
you
be.
Know?
But I don't understand it.
Well, I the plot understander. No, I'm just kidding.
Can I say something?
I watched one Vati Vidya, and I know everything.
Can I say something embarrassing about that?
Yeah.
You texted me, and you were like, how about that music? And I was like, yeah. I didn't hear the music. I was so focused on fighting, I don't notice the music in any fights.
You should listen to that song specifically. It's really a standout on the soundtrack.
I'll probably go through the whole soundtrack.
It's not like, so in Bloodborne, there's a boss in the DLC, and it's Ludwig, and he's the first boss that you fight, and the music in that is so incredible, and it's just like, they just really hit you at the gate with that. It's really wild.
Yeah, I mean.
But yeah, you should listen to that song if you can, because it's really, really good.
The only song I have any faint recollection of is the final boss theme, but that's because here's the big reveal of how long it took me. Do you want to just give me a guess, a reasonable guess?
Well, you said it took you 10 hours to get
just
to the
get
final
there,
boss.
Yeah, and that includes and all of the boss fights.
And then it was 24 hours.
Yeah,
total,
and that includes all the exploration as well, because I didn't explore everything when I got to him. There were like several bosses I had not fought. There were areas of the map I had not even unlocked yet.
So I'm going to guess 7 hours.
Oh, no, 5 hours.
Okay.
Five.
That's not bad.
That's so many hours of just one. It's like not a super long fight.
That is not that bad because some people take a really, really long time.
And that was because I was using Mimic, I'm assuming. Like, I'm sure if I didn't use that, it would have been way worse. I mean, the base game boss, as some listeners may remember from years ago, it's great. Part of me is like, that game happened before the podcast, but that game was like a pretty essential part of year two. Well, not year two, but like calendar year two. We were still in year one of the podcast.
Yeah.
But the final boss of the original game took me 8 hours of pure attempts, and this one took me 5. So it was pretty close.
Like the final boss?
Yeah, the actual final boss of Elden Ring.
Right.
I mean, Melania didn't take me as long because I was much more equipped. Like, I was very underleveled for the Elden Ring final boss. But that brings me to part of my feelings on this DLC, and that's that progression is not the best. So the thing about the base game is that just exploring, you're going to be fighting enemies, and then you get runes, and then you level up. So you just level up. You'd get more powerful just naturally exploring. Mm-hmm. In this DLC, it does not matter nearly as much because the new scaling system is these Skadoo tree fragments. I think it's called Skada tree, but I like saying Skadoo.
I think it's shadow. I think it's actually shadow, like shadow tree.
Even though it's spelled C-S-C-A.
I think it's like a Celtic pronunciation.
Well, I'm going to say Skadoo tree because it's fun to say Skadoo tree. I said I was going to rename my cat Skadoo tree fragments because just like them, every time I see him, I get excited. But every time you get a fragment, you're able to take it back to a bonfire. What are they called? Sites of Grace. You're able to take it back to a site of grace And if you have enough, you can level up your Skidoo tree level. And that makes it so that all of your stats are increased. And it's generally around a 5% bump to the amount of damage dealt and the amount of damage, the reduction in the amount of damage received. When it came out, it was just 5% every single level. But right after the game came out, people were struggling so much at the beginning that they actually altered it. The end result, if you get every Skidoo tree fragment in the game, is the same, but the first few levels actually are a much more substantial increase. So it used to be like, if you wanted to fight the final boss, it was suggested you be at like Skidoo tree level 15 out of 20, but now it's like 12, because 12 is basically like, after you hit 12, the amount it increases is much more negligible. So the thing about it, though, is that having just explored the world, I got to level 12. When I got to the final boss for the first time, I was level 12 of the Skidoo tree fragments. So it was rewarding to like explore areas, because you would find those. And then the other system was spirit ashes, which increase the power of your summons. So those are the two leveling systems that they've added to this DLC. And when you go back to the base game, they go away. So it doesn't apply at the base game. It only applies in the DLC, and that kind of makes up for the fact that the DLC stuff is stronger. And you still could theoretically just grind an insane amount so that you level up so much that it doesn't matter. But those fragments make a huge difference, you know, because if you get all of them, you end up being twice as strong in the DLC, which is way easier than doubling your level. Doubling your level would take a disgusting amount of grinding, but getting all the Skidoo tree fragments is just part of the exploration of this game. And in some cases you get them like pretty generously. Other times it's like you go a long time without one. But the thing that I don't like is that leveling feels much less substantial. So it meant there were way more cases where I was running around things. And I like, it's one thing in a Souls game when you're running back to a boss to run around enemies, but when I'm exploring areas for the first time, running past the enemies means I spend less time in these settings, which means I spend less time like absorbing the areas around me. And that's partially my fault for how I'm choosing to play. And I think it's a hard conversation to have, because, you know, you in every game, especially one like this, there's the extrinsic versus the intrinsic reward discussion. Extrinsically, you give me runes, you give me Skidoo tree fragments, you give me weapons. Intrinsically, I just want to see these places. I just want to explore and get to know this place. The intrinsic is still there, but a lot of the extrinsic value is removed because of this new system, and because I'm already such a high level, and because it takes so much effort for me to level up. Realistically, the only time I'm going to get a level is after a boss, because it takes me 300,000 runes to level up once at my current level, and a boss is the only way to get that many in a reasonable amount of time. So a lot of that extrinsic motivation has been lost. So I do think I did like this less than the base game. People who like it just as much, and they're like, it's just the exact same and I feel just the same, I respect that immensely. But for me, the original game's a 10 out of 10, absolutely. And I feel like this DLC is a 9. And that's still really high. I had an incredible time. When I finished that final boss, I let out the most guttural, disgusting roar I've ever made. That's not true. The worst one I ever made was the final boss of the original game. Ben was asleep on my lap when I beat the final boss. He wasn't happy, because I just started screaming like, yes, really loud. And he like jumped away and just stood across the room and stared at me like, why would you do that? And I was like, I'm sorry.
He doesn't understand.
But it was a lovely time. I played 24 hours in a pretty, you know, in 2 weeks. Which I haven't played a game that much in quite a while. I haven't binged a game that hard in quite a while, I should say. So it felt really nice. And every moment I was playing, I was enjoying myself until like the very end. The second I finished all the Remembrance bosses, I was like, I don't want to play more. I felt like I had hit a wall. And if I tried to play more, I know I would have resisted. It wouldn't have felt as good to explore, because I had explored all the primary areas. And at that point, I did need a guide, because there's a couple areas of the map. And this is one thing that's different from the original, I think, is like all the areas of the map of the original you do just kind of find. But this one, if you find every area of this map without any guidance, oh my goodness, you're either wildly incredibly perceptive, like crazy perceptive, or very lucky, because a couple of the sections are deliberately in very, very, very hidden. And one of them, well, one of them isn't a map section, but getting to a certain chunk of the map, I'm like, how would I, it involved using an emote. And I'm like, when have I ever needed to use a specific emote ever? Mm-hmm. How would I have known to do this? And like, there's like a little like in-game, you know how like people leave messages, but like FromSoft leaves a couple around themselves and they look a little different. Mm-hmm. The one that was there was not helpful. It would not have hinted me to do that thing. Without Google, I would not have found that section of the map, quite simply, which is fine. Wow. I don't think there's anything wrong with Googling and getting help, especially in a game like this. But I was very happy that I got to the final boss without that. So having to do it afterwards, it kind of took a little bit of the wind out of my sails. But I still extremely highly recommend it. If you liked Elden Ring, just play it. If you liked Elden Ring, just play this. There's no reason not to. The only exception would be if you want to pull a Kelly and replay the original game.
You know, in Bloodborne, there's an emote that you can do where you have your one arm up and your one arm to the side. And if you do it in front of this brain thing, you get a rune. But you have to do it for a certain amount of time. And then your character, like, eventually just sort of, like, switches arms like this. And it's supposed to be... This is a little spoilery for Bloodborne, but it's nothing crazy. And it's supposed to be, like, the perfect geometry of your character's arms conveys that they're able to communicate with the, like, great ones. Because they're able to, like, get their arms in the perfect... Like, it's basically attaining perfection to be able to communicate with the great old ones. So that's Bloodborne for you. And all you get is a rune, really. I mean, that's it. I mean, it's a nice rune. And that's the rune... And with Bloodborne, the runes, the way that they're incorporated is they're kind of like talismans, as they function in Elden Ring, but you scratch them on the inside of your brain to gain knowledge. Anyway,
gross.
Everybody should play Bloodborne.
I'm gonna.
It would be a shame if you could only play it on like one platform. Oh.
I'm gonna play it soon. I'm gonna play another Souls game. I think I'm gonna probably. I have a friend who I was going to play with. I think we're going to play Dark Souls 3 because I have very little Souls experience. So,
oh, I love Dark Souls 3, but there's so much of it that you need, like you get more.
Yeah,
it's more enriching experience if you play 1 first.
Yeah, I kind of want to start with 1. I don't know. Doesn't matter. I played another game this week, Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for clarity, I've actually been playing it for months, but I haven't talked about it on the show. I think I mentioned it once when I started, right?
You definitely talked about it.
But I stopped talking about it. I mean, I've been talking to you a little bit off air, but like I said, I was going to wait till I finished it to talk about it more. And that is the 2009 release Final Fantasy 13. I have two friends, Reagan and Cal, and months ago we made some comment. Well, what happened was we watched Final Fantasy VII Advent Children complete on Blu-ray, and we checked the special features just because we were curious, and one of them was a Final Fantasy XIII trailer. And we're like, oh, that's funny. And like, there was no dub. It was like very early trailer. It was very funny to watch, and we're like, I wonder how that game holds up. Like, we should try it. We should play it. Let's play it together. And this is like that thing where like when you like know somebody in college, you're like, we should hang out. You're not going to hang out with that person ever. This was us when we were all like, yeah, let's try Final Fantasy 13. Let's do it. But then we did it. And we basically started hanging out every week or so and playing through a chunky chunk of the game as much as we could handle in one sitting, basically. That started in April. And on the 4th of July, we actually finished Final Fantasy 13. It took us about 40 hours. Okay, I just told Kelly, because I saw this, I put this on the list, and I was like, Kelly, get ready to fight. Final Fantasy 13 is bad. It is fascinating. I mean, we played 40 hours, so there's something there. There is something there. But there is so much.
That's such a sunk cost fallacy happening. You put 40 hours into that game.
It must be good. Well, I didn't say it must be good. It's just
something interesting was going on.
There's something interesting. I'm not. That is a fact.
I think it's the characters.
Okay.
I think it's the characters because I think that they are different enough for a Final Fantasy game.
Yes.
If you think about the Final Fantasy game that came before it, any of the games that came before it, there are certain archetypes that happen in every Final Fantasy game. These archetypes sort of get filled in 13, but not really. They sort of get subverted. Lightning is sort of Cloud-esque, but she is different. Not only because she's a woman, but for many other reasons.
Because she's a cop.
But, well, she's... she's not, though. She's not.
You're right. Well, she quit being a cop, so...
It's a story about being ostracized from society.
Mm-hmm.
Right. This is me trying to hit the word count on my college essays. It's a story about being ostracized from society. And you've got all these characters who in most normal circumstances would not be ostracized, but they're forced into this situation. It's got lesbians. That's great. It's got...
just for clarity for the audience, because not many people have played 13. There's implications, but it's not that progressive.
To me.
I mean, I agree. It seems overt, but I just needed to be clear that it wasn't some exciting, crazy step. It was a lot of implication that I hope they know they were making.
Yes. I also think that it's a shame because I feel like every Final Fantasy that has followed has really... Lightning was the main character. She was on most, if not all, of the promotion for the game.
Mm-hmm.
And audiences reacted so negatively to 13 that they just have never really returned to a female protagonist. 15 was a huge... I mean, 14 obviously was a huge departure from everything. But 15, which is sort of the next game in the series, if you think about it, was a huge departure. And it was so... testosterone'd up. It could have been like a locker room, but a very gay one.
I was gonna say I don't know if you know what
so like an Equinox like. West Hollywood that. Locker room.
Okay, I'll give Square Enix a little bit of a pass because it has only been two games since 13, 15,
right,
and 16.
But they also like the like the female characters in 15.
Well, 15, yes, bad. 16.
16 even. I'm sorry, Jill was great, but...
Well, 16 had bad characters. It's not... It had nothing to do with gender.
I don't think 16 had bad characters, but I think that the characters in 16 were like... There could have been more going on, and there just wasn't. It was like... As with everything else with that game, there could have been more going on, and there just wasn't.
I think 16, one of the most interesting characters was Benedicta. Because I don't think there was a lot of interesting characterization in 16, but I think Benedicta had some.
Right.
But 13. Anyway. Lightning is... okay. By the end of the game, Lightning was incredibly pointless. The only thing that she had was that, like, Sarah was in a crystal. Her sister was in a crystal. By the end, her actual motivation... she became pointless in her own story. Especially with, like, Vanille and Fang becoming the real main characters, which I don't think is a problem in a game to, like, kind of pivot who's the most important. But when your game is, like, lightning in like, how you're presenting it, but then by the end you're like, oh, Lightning doesn't matter.
I will say I feel like this was a trick, too, because Lightning was not the main character from how I felt with the game, even though she was advertised as such. I feel like there was a lot of focus on Snow.
Well,
and like you said,
I mean, if you replay it, Snow is in it for like 5 seconds. Snow's in it like once the party reunites, Snow stops speaking completely. The back half of the story is just an absolute mess. It is like the characters kind of stop doing anything. They're just walking and some story happens around them, but like so little. Here's the thing that made me like shocked. Everybody online, and I played this game in its entirety as a child, but I think I like wiped it from my memory, except for the Bartandalus boss fight that was agony. But replaying it now, I was told by lots of people, and it's like kind of the meme online, oh, it gets good at 20 hours. When we hit 20 hours, this game got so much worse. Because it starts introducing, it's like, oh, now it's the open world section. The problem becomes, combat becomes a one solution problem. So you'll enter a battle, and there is a correct paradigm set. And that is awful. The whole paradigm system is interesting on its own, being able to switch the classes of your party members on the fly and create interesting combinations. That's an awesome idea. And I think that's like the thing that Kelly likes to talk about the most, is the idea of the paradigm shift. Very cool. Very good idea. But especially in the last 5 to 10 hours, there are boss fights where there is two paradigms that are correct, like two paradigm sets that are just correct. And if you try to use the paradigm, because like we had like a set of paradigms we were using on most enemies that we designed and we figured out a system we liked, and it was satisfying. But then we got to certain bosses. They weren't even bosses. They were just overworld enemies that just stopped us in our tracks. And they were like, no, that's incorrect. And we had to Google it. And Google's like, oh, you're using the wrong set. And I'm like, that's frustrating. You're giving me all this freedom. But for some bosses, it's like a puzzle. And you're not giving me any hint to the solution. Only game facts can do that. And do you know something? We hate game facts now. Because people, there were some bosses where they were like, we had to Google, like, oh, what are we doing wrong here? And they're just like, be better. Oh, did you do every single side quest? And we're like, no. Stop being so, like, game facts likes to talk down to you. That's what we discovered.
Yes.
It's very 2010. But the story just became kind of a mess. And the last, very, very last bit had some interesting ideas presented. But just that the characters stopped doing anything. They were the vehicle. You were moving them along. But, like, there's, like, a threat. Nobody, if you're going to play Final Fantasy 13, I guess, turn this off. But I highly suggest you do not, unless you're going to play it in a group setting.
I highly suggest you do.
I would say only if you're going to play it with people.
I say play it alone in a dark room.
Okay, maybe not a dark room, but...
I say it must be a dark, dark room.
But here's what I'll say. At the end of the game, there's a sort of bait and switch where it seems like all the characters are dead. And it has no impact. Like, it's kind of like, that sucks. The story is going to move along anyway. And I'm like, the theming that you discussed of, like, the ostracization is an interesting theme. But the problem is there are so few segments where you see, like, society ostracizing them. There's, like, two scenes in the entire game where the public realizes who these people are. The rest of the game is them just fighting, like, beasts or the cops. And that's it. So, like, you don't get to actually... I feel like that theme doesn't get fleshed out as much as it could. And also, so much of the story is in data logs. You literally have to read it in encyclopedia entries. They don't explain things. You have to read it. And that is a bad way to tell a story. Like, that, you know, the show versus don't... The show, don't tell. Okay, if you're not going to show, do tell. Don't make me have to pause the game to read the companion stuff. I don't think there's a problem with having like a data log in a game to like refresh people or to expand on things. But if it's required to understand the story, you have a problem. Because in the story itself, none of that is conveyed. There are very few, like a lot of central points just don't get hit unless you have read the data logs. And thankfully, because we were playing as a team, while I was doing like boring combat grinding or something and moving along, one of us would be on the phone, like looking up different lore things so we could kind of get a better understanding, which is again why I honestly suggest if you're going to play it in a group, because that helped a lot. And there's just a lot of boring sections. There's bosses that, like, the one boss I went in and I set up, my team set up, and it was 10 minutes long, which doesn't sound like a long time, but it took us 4 tries. So we were there for almost an hour trying this boss. And the final attempt, I was like, this can't be right. Like, this, I cannot be doing this right. This is so slow and nothing is happening. And all I'm doing is mashing auto battle, which auto battle is not a problem if the paradigm system works really well, as evidenced by something I'll talk about in a second. But when I'm in this boss fight and the only thing I'm doing is switching to the healing paradigm when I take a good hit and then switching back to the combat one, it gets boring. And I was literally like, I'm going to get 0-star rating. Like, I must be going so slow. I finished it in 10 minutes and the game was like, that was supposed to take you 19 minutes. Good job. And I'm like, so you're telling me I did that like well? It just gets, and I think that's like a JRPG problem, especially of that time, is like sponges, just damaged sponges. I think that's a carryover from like games like Final Fantasy X and a lot of PS2 RPGs, is just like the crazy long boss fight. It's like, it's not difficult if it's long. Length does not make something difficult, which like we talked about Elden Ring, those bosses are not long. They're difficult because they're difficult, not because they waste your time. And I think that Final Fantasy 13 feigns difficulty, but it's just time sinking. That being said, I'm glad I played it. It was a really fascinating experience. It's like a time, it's a crazy interesting time capsule. If you're a fan of Final Fantasy overall, you're going to get something out of this. It's just a strange product, and there is like a lot of hints of what was to come in the future. And I'm also excited because we have committed not to just playing Final Fantasy 13, but the entire series. So we will be playing Final Fantasy 13 2 and Final Fantasy 13 Lightning Returns as well.
I liked 13 2.
Well, we started it. We were like 3 hours into 13 2, and holy crap, it is an improvement. I mean, we're only it's 3 hours in, so it could drop off, but like it is a drastic improvement in almost every way.
Yeah, it's radically different. There are things about 13.2 I don't like, but we'll talk about that when you guys finish.
Yeah, I'm excited because I don't know what's going to happen. Like 13.1 I played, so I kind of remembered a bunch of it, but like 13.2 I'm like, I don't know what's going on. But like the combat is a lot snappier. The paradigms feel like they're a little bit more important. Plus your third party member is replaced by a Pokemon. You like get to summon monsters, and I think that adds a lot of fun little depth. And I think like the party switching system in 1 was actually frustrating because I'm like, ugh. Because I had to switch party members when they forced me to, not when I wanted to. Whereas this game, it feels like, I mean, I could have a third party member I don't know about, but it seems like it's going to be Sarah and Null, and then you have a Pokemon as your third that's constantly going to be cycling throughout the entire game. But like the combat's way quicker. The story is clear in the opening hour, we're like 3 hours in the opening chunk. We know what's going on. I like know what's happening, and that is something that I could not say at almost any point in 13, that I genuinely knew what was going on. I got the vibes. I kind of understood, but like now I like really do understand this. It's funny because like the concept is really complicated. It's like about time travel and like realms and such, but it's pretty straightforward. The way they're talking about it is pretty clear, and I think it still is like perplexing in a lot of ways. If I had to guess, I gave 13 a 5 out of 10 in my review when I put it in my games list. I was like, that was bad but fascinating. I had a great time playing it, even if there were a lot of deep rooted flaws that I almost feel like a remake could fix, which is hilarious. I don't think they should or will, but a remake, like a true remake of 13, could be incredible. But 13.2, I'm like, I feel like this is going to be an incredible like 7, like a wonderful 7, which is the low rating, but after a 5, wow, it's god tier.
I'm not going to say anything. I don't want to color your perception.
You think it'll drop? You could say that.
I might drop.
Okay. I know it's shorter. I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
But I'm very curious to see where it goes. So, yeah, that was Final Fantasy 13. I had a great time playing it with my friends Reagan and Cal. It was like a fun little thing for our friendship, like just to spend time playing this thing that we all like grew quite the disdain for by the end. Like watching the final cutscenes, we were all just like yelling. We're like, why would you like, why? These characters we've been with for 40 hours, like let them do something. They're just standing there not doing anything while the story happens in front of them. And I'm like, genuinely, like if you took 4 out of the 6 party members out of the final cutscenes, nothing would have changed. Vanille and Fang were the only important characters in the final couple hours. Just really disappointing. Anyway, so that was Final Fantasy 13. And then I played one more game that I'm going to talk about very, very, very briefly because I just want to tease people for what I'll be talking about next episode. And that is Shin Megami Tensei 5, Vengeance. This is a fun time capsule because I was trying to figure out, and this game came out, SMT5, Shin Megami Tensei 5 came out on Nintendo Switch December of 21. So this show was fresh out the oven. We were in the opening few months. And now I get to revisit it years later in this new package. The whole thing about this game is that right at the beginning, you pick a path, whether it's going to be the base game's path or the new Vengeance path. I'm like 3 hours in, and thus far the story has been basically exactly the same, except they just introduced a new character, which is exciting because in the original game you only had demons with you, but now you can actually have some people in there sometimes. Kind of like a little persona-esque thing, which is a cool addition. But the quality of life improvements to this game are profound. And to be fair, I also played it on Switch. The original game is Switch exclusive, and this one's on everything, so I'm playing it on PS5. It's a lot sharper, shall we say. It runs at 60 now instead of 30, and the resolution is, like, perfect. It is flawless, which makes sense. If it's got ported from Switch, it was probably like, wow, this thing's it's easy to run this now. Battles go so, so fast. It is a turn-based RPG by Atlus. It is incredible. Like, I did an overworld boss, and I hit auto battle, and then I mashed X to skip animations, and it was a 10-second battle. Which, like, to some people, you'd be like, well, why would you want battles to go that fast? But for, like, regular overworld battles that have nothing interesting about them, that is great. Let's just zoom through them, you know? So I'm really excited to play more of this. I didn't think I was going to want to revisit this game, but getting in a few hours in, I'm like, wait, I think I'm all in. I think I'm ready to revisit this game. Because listeners of the show know I'm not the biggest on revisiting games. But I think this is it. I think this is going to keep me hooked. And I'm excited to play more.
Yippee!
But that's all I'll say for now. I think I'll have a lot of thoughts next week because it's a very dense JRPG. Anyway, do you play anything else besides Elden Ring? I feel like I talked for a billion years.
No, you're fine. Just like I was saying, I've been in my Dragon Age summer. I got to Dragon Age 2. There's three acts in that game. I'm at the beginning of Act 2. So pretty far along. I'd say I'm like 40% of my way through the game. Very exciting. They've been slowly trickling out news about Veilguard via Game Informer articles. And there is some big, like, fandom event happening. Like, it's literally a party run by, you know, the wiki, like, fandom wiki.
Oh.
And Dragon Age is, like, the host. Oh. Like, the series is the host. So I don't know if any news is going to come out of that, like, release date or anything. I'm a little bit doubtful, but we might get some new tidbits because they did say we might get some new tidbits. So anything crazy happens, I guess we'll find out soon.
Is it safe to assume? I assumed a release date would be at Gamescom.
I'm sort of thinking Gamescom, too, but
it's August.
Yeah. That's my running theory. And I'm kind of a mind that it's going to be October.
So you're done saying September.
I was thinking September, but my thing is the Inquisition came out in September 2014. So it would be sort of poetic for it to be like right on the 10-year mark. But I also think September is like really not that far away. So that would be really wild. But I am sort of more leaning toward October. I kind of don't think it'll be November, though.
Well, opening night live is August 20th, so it seems
that would be wild. Imagine they announced the release date and it was
September,
like, in a month or less. That would be wild,
right? That's why if it's gonna be at Gamescom, I would say October's the earliest it could be. I almost think if it's Gamescom, it might be November.
I don't think it's gonna be November
for me. For you, I hope it's like September 1st, or what did we determine? September 20th was the first day of fall.
Yeah, I feel like I feel like it's ready to go. I feel like it's ready. I feel like, just based on everything that we've heard, I don't know. So I'm thinking October. If it's November, no big deal. I'll have a lot of time off during the holiday to play it, but I am hopeful that it's at least October. I'd love September, but I can deal with October.
As we get into the later we are, like, September's 2 months from now. So
yeah,
I think a 2 month turnaround seems like the absolute bare minimum. So if they're doing it in August, October seems like the earliest it could be.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So thanks everybody for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We will see you in 2 weeks, unless something crazy happens.
you know, the second we're going to stop recording and Nintendo's going to throw that hot potato right at our faces and be like, Switch 2 out tomorrow.
I have my hot potato catcher's mitt in my hands right now.
It's funny because you said that and you got quiet because you put the catcher's mitt in front of your mouth.
That's right. I did put the catcher's mitt in front of my mouth, which you guys can't see, but I am holding a catcher's mitt right now.
Yeah, sure looks like it.
That's podcasting, baby.
What, lying to your audience?
Yeah. Oh. Exactly. Thanks, everybody, so much for listening. I hope you have a great day and week and month and year. And we will see you in a week or two. 2 weeks. Yeah. Bye.